为爱那是万里，感谢 all the world I have to me. I hear the guy. I don't know the word. Feel the rolling thunder. Thy power throughout the universe display. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art. Yeah, baby, singing some more. Anyway, okay. I get a sense for the allure of more modern coming together of modern music and gospel-ish things. This is Jason Nemerow. You're listening to Cohen Meander. I'm working to come up with something useful to say about Mormon 8. I think it comprised it was probably intended to be the farewell statement of Moroni. And he added some more to the record later on. There's more back there, but Mormon chapter 8 is really kind of an interesting summation of what was coming. And to a large degree, a warning of what to expect, of what to know of what Christ will do in the last days, or the first days, or in the great summing up when we change gears from being a telestial world to graduating up to being a terrestrial world. This morning I was up a few minutes earlier than normal, so I was looking at, thank goodness, what passes for news for me. It has a lot to do with technology. Anything around e-ink, which is kind of a paper-ish, kind of an electronic paper. It's not terribly interesting to most people, but it is to me. I like the fact that you can apply a charge with a little bit of information, write a screen full of text, and then shut down the system. And what was written there will stay there until the next charge comes to make changes to the screen, usually to the whole screen. Anyway, I was reading some of the stuff that was coming up. Little tiny battery technology is getting really interesting. And I often wonder if some of the innovations of Nathan Stubblefield were used something approaching this technology? I seem to recall he called what he was tapping into baric energy, which didn't appear, at least to him, to be chemical. It seemed to be innate currents. I actually call it a baric current, within the Earth itself, that he was drawing from to power his Earth batteries. And I tell you, it's one of the great indications of a technology and an ability that was initially overcome by what I would call the chemical wash, electrical systems. And these things were just dominate, still do. Nobody seems to be able to think of anything outside of that box. And number one, it's telling. Number two, it's quite disturbing. I often wonder if I'm not just a person out of place. And understanding of things and ideas and concepts that elude, it seems to be that elude the vast majority of other people, even those who we would consider to be our finest and our brightest and our most amazing, just simply because they can't conceive of this thing. And I'm wondering if it was ever something that people could figure out how to do. when it's like, oh, Nathan Stubblefield figured out this and this. Nikola Tesla was almost like this. I don't think I'd call it an empiricist, because that really is the god of the times today. And I've never seen myself as particularly an empiricist. Something a little more basal, perhaps, or at least, you know, and I'm not a guy that's digging around in the dirt or feeling in the air, trying to discover these things. I'm a guy that simply sees it and says, wow, this is amazing. We should try to take advantage of this. And then it's not interesting to anybody, which is, you know, I used to think it was because we were such a portable society. We wanted everything in a nice little box that we could put a couple of switches, dials, and a little LCD display on. Ultimately, when it came down to it, the biggest thing we did was replace old analog dials with new digital ones, but that was all, you know, and that's what you could put down as, oh, that was our great innovation. It's like, Anyway, it's amazing to see some of the new battery technologies. I don't think it's a huge leap from what we have now. They're just finding interesting new chemistries to draw from. Going too fast. But I think it has to do with us being able to tap into more primal things. The telestial world that we've been living in is very much extractive. You hear the stories of the Polynesian islands that were just strip mined for some chemical or another, potash or potassium or something, and those islands are just destroyed. Mostly out of sight of the people, of regulators. And how interesting that is. If for people in the environmental movement, this is definitely something that they should be latching on to, but often they aren't, because, can I be honest, the environmental movement, for the most part, except for maybe some small foot soldier types, really has more to do with gaining notoriety, becoming an influential person. It really appeals to that. Who's a good example of it? I can't believe I forgot his name. Wrote An Inconvenient Truth, which is a scare tactic to get you to behave some other way, mostly to distract you from gospel living. And to be far more concerned about, I don't know, helping, Al Gore, that's his name, in helping Al Gore stay relevant, be able to go to the kind of conferences and shindigs that he likes going to, being able to go around and be on stage and tell you how the earth is going to end in 10 years, 20 years ago. And how, even though he staked his entire reputation on doing these things, he used to be a politician, and he found out that this kind of stuff, not just the environmental movement, but the kind of tactics you use in the environmental movement, and other movements too, social justice is exactly the same way, is just as lucrative as politics, but you're not fighting so hard for it like you would as a politician. And it ends up being kind of, well, now I'm an elder statesman. And you're going, but, you know, you still get invites to come speak at big dinners. People still say, you're just so wonderful. And it works still. I mean, not at the amazing level it did when it was like, oh my gosh, this is like a gold mine. It's like these guys find their personal gold mines. And he tried to make it by saying that he was the inventor of the internet, and he was one of the politicians that sponsored the bill that created the funds upon which those who did create the internet, or the ARPANET at the time, that funded them. And he doesn't use that too much, because he doesn't say that much anymore, because it didn't stick. People weren't impressed enough. So to the environmental movement he went. And Greta Thunberg, all these people are folks that or front people for groups that were basically trying to, that either tried to or succeeded in fear-mongering things. And it's really interesting to see, and I don't know how I got off on that particular tangent, but let me see if I can get myself back. The news. It said in prophecy, and I don't know how, and I haven't really delved too hard. I see that Mormon 8, you know, I've been slowly reading through the Book of Mormon, and it's not just that I'm going slow. Here on something like Mormon 8, I'm gonna spend a lot of time digging around in it. It's not just going to be for, you know, however long it takes to read that number of verses, going at one or two verses a day. No, it's going to be that I'm going to be spending some time, maybe weeks, trying to ferret out what I see and what I want to say about what's going on. And when I step back, it's really interesting to look at. This is almost akin to 3 Nephi chapter 30, which is another incredibly meaty. This is something that Christ said while he was among the people in America. And how indicative it is of Christ and his inherent hardness. I did, and I haven't been doing recordings as much because I think my mind was too much stuck in Matthew 25. The parables about the kingdom of God, the 10 virgin wedding feast, the parable of the talents, which has been just meatier than meaty, meaty, as in meat as opposed to milk, in how this really indicates how the kingdom of heaven works, and how, I'm sorry, misled modern people are. I don't interface much with Christians, and you can say I'm a bad person for that. I'm not really a living missionary sort. I spend a lot of time at the temple, so a lot of the work that I do is with the dead, and I know people will probably say, well, that's not right. You need to go out and do missionary work. You need to be out among the people, and I feel no particular draw that way. You know, I don't think I'm predisposed toward staying away from people, but I'm really not that kind of a missionary. You know, there's some wonderful people, and God bless them, go for it, that are really good at helping people to see the restored gospel. You know, and I sometimes poo-poo it by saying, yeah, trying to out-Christian the Christians. And the really sad part is that's working to a certain amount, to a certain extent. Christianity is really losing some of its appeal to people. Now, it may be just because the concept that I have, that Heavenly Father is clearing the baffles, that there are spirits that need to get processed, that aren't going to be, at least that have been assigned to this world, that aren't going to make it to the terrestrial world, so have to be processed now. And in whatever fashion it is, when people get all upset because of teen pregnancy and things like that, and it's not good, there's a commandment against it. But I think it's pretty much gone, which I think is interesting. Teen pregnancy used to be a big problem, and there was this guy who had done a lot of work and gotten a lot of money, and he takes credit for the fact that teen pregnancy is basically not really a problem anymore for some reason. And he takes credit for the fact that this happened, and he tells people, well, this is what it's all about. Another person that, like Al Gore with environmentalism, used the the quote terrible scourge of teen pregnancy, and he took all the kudos for the practical disappearance of teen pregnancy, and that it was his techniques that got it to happen. And I don't think so. I think this is all getting destroyed. I think women in the feminist movement have destroyed interest in propagative copulation. And when people talk about how overly sexualized our world is, it's like, you know what? I said, you say sexualized, then you go, if it is, where's all the sex? And I think it's petering out. I think this is us getting to the point to where God's starting to goof with the sex drive. You know, families are smaller, things like that. And people say, and people decry it. Now, you know, I come from a culture that says, you need to bring children into the world. This is God's will. And so you do it that way. And a lot of people just aren't doing anything. You know, you talk about the end cells, the involuntary celibates. And I don't think they're so much involuntary anymore. It's just not interesting anymore. Sexless marriages, people who are dual income, no kids, dinks. All these things are just kind of petering out. And it's interesting to see. It makes the social scientists, frankly, all the scientists are absolutely flabbergasted to the point to where they say, until we figure out an explanation for why these things are happening, I don't think we're going to talk about it very much. You don't hear much about it. When I was a kid, every town of any size at all had an X-rated movie theater, had a smutty bookstore, or two or three, and I think that's going away. You say, oh, well, they can go out on the internet and get that stuff. And you go, you know what? I said, and I'm not some great surveyor of this stuff. I don't kill myself. I'm still alive. I get, and it's just an impression. that these things aren't quite as lucrative as they used to be. OnlyFans was quite interesting for a handful of years, especially during the COVID years. And people were locked up and couldn't go out much. And girls were pretty much selling aspects of themselves, exhibitionism, and OnlyFans was a fantastic way of monetizing this. And the interesting thing is that it's dying. It's dying on the vine as we speak. There's always going to be perverts, so there will always be a little bit of a market for it, but not. But it has peaked, and it's starting to decline. For, you know, it's not really that big of a thing. It's become a regular business, and the girls that were making $100,000 a year as 20-year-olds, basically selling themselves digitally to anybody who, you know, to all these perverts, it seems to have, these things are following a pretty standard curve. The sad part is it's boring for the scientists to bring it up, you know, because it's not so much a scientific thing. It's observed, but it's not something you can do a lot of experimentation on, sadly, without, you know, people saying funny things about you and saying that you're a sick pervert yourself, which I think is what most of the research on any of this stuff falls to. Yeah, isn't it great? I get to be called a scientist and I'm basically a pervert. So, anyway. So I'm amazed how things are altering and things are changing as far as I can ascertain of how much the world is almost ordering itself to not satisfy the puerile desires of the telestial set. And it's making them crazy. And there's a lot talking about it. Oh, how are we going to, you know, back in the old days, you know, the baby boomers that I'm at the tail end of, Gen X that I'm kind of at the beginning of, but I kind of straddle both a little bit. I think I'm more of a boomer, but anyway, you know, they would talk about these things, you know, we would, my basic sexual urges were served by the Sears catalog lingerie division, which wasn't really, you know, usually had the heads cut off and stuff like that. You know, it was not human. And I had to get past that. You know, it's like, I don't look at those kinds of catalogs anymore. I don't search that out. I guess it's still there for the people that do, but it's less and less. And I think I got out of it because it didn't satisfy. And when I got married and was able to use the sexual drive I had with Lisa to have children, and the old stuff that we used to say of how you used your sexuality, you know, and people say, well, how much does it apply anymore? And you go, you know, I don't know. Anyway, it's really interesting to watch, and it's continuing, and I don't want to call it so much innovation as us using the scientific method to to keep using different materials and figuring out their properties better. And that's not so much an innovative thing as it is kind of an evolutionary thing. I think most of the people who are scientists and are quote-unquote inventors are just evolutionists. You know, we're eking out a couple of more miles a gallon out of internal combustion engines. We're trying to do something interesting with electric cars and things like that, but we're still continuing to find that electricity and batteries and stuff like that itself, solar panels, really aren't the great saviors we thought they were. And we're slowly going back to nuclear and coming up with safer, more practical ways of using that technology instead of just throwing it away altogether. And it's really interesting to watch. And it's like, so what is, when people talk about the great paradisiacal glory, it's almost, and people think it's going to be the millennium. And to be really honest, I don't think so. I think the paradisiacal glory comes when it's gradual. And I think it'll be over the 1,000 years as we move into the Earth becoming celestialized. It doesn't mean some wonderful things aren't going to be happening in the millennial time, but I really picture it as more like a desert. And that a lot of what was appealing about mountains and valleys and the beauty of the earth, it might be a telestial thing. I don't even know if all this green environmental stuff will actually end up looking green in our terrestrial sphere. I don't know. Our pictures of, I think perhaps our concepts of the Garden of Eden may be very interesting. I think it may actually have been like a garden, you know, mostly dirt, fertile. and that there are gardens. And when they say, well, we're not going to have weeds, you go, you know what? It says, I think almost everything our earth has could be classified as kind of weedy. You know, when you say, oh, this is the jungle, and isn't it amazing? And you go, it is amazing. It says, but for all practical purposes, it may just be a bunch of basically weeds. And that when they say, oh, we're tearing out this and that, and you go, trees seem really important. Trees are symbolic. Trees are good, and good and bad come from trees. Seems we're only going to have the good trees left. And those trees will, I don't know how many there are. I don't know if we're going to be farming trees. Even in the early accounts from the Garden of Eden, God said, one of his commandments was, take care of this garden. Take care of it. It'll take care of you. Is kind of that concept. And as much as I think a lot of the Garden of Eden will hold sway in the terrestrial world. It may be enclosed vineyards. It may be those kinds of gardens. God didn't give any impression that the whole world was like the Garden of Eden. You know, he says, I planted this garden east in Eden. And that's where he put Adam and Eve. And that's where they stayed. Dress this garden. Take good care of it. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Everybody gets the impression, or at least I've felt like that the impression is among people that these things will just come to pass, and that the whole world will just be one huge garden place. I'm not saying it's not true. What I'm saying is maybe it's not going to be that way. You know, I get the impression that to a large extent, almost everything that people have painted in their heads, what it's really going to be like is going to be a disappointment to them. And you go, what are you upset about? And that God's realm really is some sequestered places. They might be whole planets. They might be, you know, domains in the expanse. But to be honest, it might have a feel of like Indian tribes back in the day of, you know, although a certain amount of land could be considered the territory, the hunting grounds of a tribe or many tribes that have affiliations with each other, that it really is little enclaves. And between those enclaves, there was a whole lot of nothing. Whether it was trees in the forest way that it is for us, I like to think of them as privacy screens, and between villages. And a village is a pretty decent size. Human beings do well in village-sized places. God had to destroy Babylon because big cities, you know, and he confused the languages and they all broke up into little pieces according to how you could understand people. Big cities cause problems. Horrors like slavery and wars and things like that are really the product of big cities. That doesn't mean small places will fall apart for other reasons. I don't think Zarahemla was really a huge city, although one gets the impression it might have been. And that these places formed around temples, around, you know, places where the Lord centralized things. Anyway, so I kind of picture the world that way, and where there are deserts, there will continue to be deserts. Where there are forests, there will continue to be forests. But there will be enclaves villages carved out of these places. And a lively trade? I think so. You know, do I think money and stuff like that may go away? Maybe, but probably not. For just the fact that it just simplifies everything. You don't have to worry about if somebody with cotton really needs tobacco. I don't know if I think tobacco is more of a weed, so I think it's going to go away. But, you know, one trading item and another trading item if different people don't need those things, there's still going to be the lively trade in bringing such things together and making these things happen. I think we're gradually getting into these things, and the great and marvelous things that will happen are going to be amazing, and that we really are going to get, when people, the atheists say that we're going to do all this stuff by our own power and our own intellect. And I think that's, although it may appear that way, that to a large extent, each one of these people who make these innovations happen, they will do it under the inspiration of heaven. And as people come to realize that this is the mechanism by which these things happen, you'll have more people clinging on to the Lord and taking advantage of what the Lord is giving us. I still think that the most amazing thing that we will see is the wholesale destruction of evil. Getting back to the whole thing about sex and sexualization is that I think it will be unfulfilling even more than it is now as people don't marry or go through they might wed a person or another. That might happen. And it's mostly about girls feeling good about themselves and about looking beautiful and having this be their magical princess day. And that's important because this is when you really show yourself as a daughter of God, and how marvelously, and that whole thing. We're getting more, since there's getting to be more and more divorces among the people who are getting married, you're finding that the really compelling thing for a lot of women about this is the wedding itself. Once the excitement build up to the wedding is there, and then kind of the honeymoon period thereafter that doesn't last all that long, lasting a shorter and shorter amount of time, that's really what a lot of modern girls are after. They all want the whole wedding thing. They want to be treated and looked upon by that. And the sad part is that you see that more and more young women aren't living up to that picture, and that guys are catching on, and they're just not, it's like, I want something more than that. But I'm finding out that you don't want any more than that. You just want all the stuff. And it costs tens of thousands of dollars to create the kind of element that these girls want, the kind of ceremony that these women really want out of this. And it's getting weird. It is, but what people really want to do, the wedding industry is going on, and God said it would. There will be people marrying and giving in marriage. This is still going to go on. But I got the impression from Scripture that it really isn't that great of a thing. It's almost like it's a trade now, the whole... Lisa really gets a kick out of the movies that what's her name? Lopez, Jennifer Lopez does. I think Lisa, my wife Lisa, feels a strange kind of affinity to some of the characters that Jennifer Lopez has played in movies, that they really sing to her on some level. And I think it's because it's just a whole string of, and Jennifer Lopez's life, I think to some degree, really kind of mirrors this. She's almost become her real life is as much a caricature as her characters are in various movies. People have been saying that about a lot of, I don't know if Taylor Swift ends up being this plastic figure, kind of like the Barbie movie, that just embodies the new feminism. Sexless. And it could be sexualized. I mean, everything about Barbie has got the kind of body that a lot of girls have been very interested in. So many girls can't reach that weird standard that we've really sexualized different body styles. The big booty, the almost sickeningly curvy, you know, I've got a 45-inch bust and a 12-inch waist and a 58-inch butt. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's almost to sick extremes, but, you know, and that's being out there touted, and apparently it appeals to all kinds of groups of people where a more natural figure it's like anybody who wants to be noticed can't look normal. They need to look some other way. And you really have to get away from that to kind of get there. And that's kind of what I think the terrestrial world is going to look like. It is going to look like plain, normal people. Not thin, not fat, just people. And what, you know, when they say, oh, climate change, we must fight climate change. You go, I think the climate's changing in favor of how the earth is going to be. I think the earth is doing to itself what it's going to do to get rid of pollution. Some places might get greener, some places may not. We will be working more in harmony with the earth, I think. That means that we're not going to do crazy stuff. I mean, out in the deserts, we might still. I can't think that we won't stop experimenting and growing and learning. And that the more rational, I hate to use the word rational because I'm not really a terribly rational person. The more sensible aspects of, I don't even know if conservation is the right word. I'm trying to use different words than the radicalized, charged up things. When I was young, Earth First kind of environmentalism was really a huge thing. I'm glad to a certain extent that was a fad and it's now gone. People aren't spiking trees as much as they were. I don't think they spike trees hardly at all anymore. It's just not as fulfilling. To a large degree, it was about getting attention. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to get away from is the need for attention. And those who are attention seekers tend to fall into sin. They tend to fall into being on the left hand of the Lord, which are the goats, which are the people who are going to go to damnation, which is just being eternally stopped. You're really not going to be able to accomplish anything. And the terrestrial, the telestial kingdom will be a lot of attention seeking still. I mean, it's those kinds of people. I don't know how satisfying it will be, but it's for basically the attention seekers, as opposed to those who are just trying to do what needs to be done, to get along. Trying to remember what talk we were listening to recently. It may have been from Elder Holland, who's now President Holland. It's about it not being so showy. Anyway, and that we're all going to have work to do, but it will be, it'll be good. I'm totally amazed by the kind of computer stuff that's happening right now. And sometimes I fall into the trap of, boy, I want to have a Faraday cage so that after the big EMPs come, my technology is going to be preserved, and that we'll be able to come out of the horrible end time as something doom. I'm going to survive some kind of doomsday. And I don't know if there will be a doomsday in that fashion. I think there may be pockets of it. There may very well be places where these things happen. I think it's going to be in big cities. I think it will, to a large extent, when we talk about Babylon and its destruction, it'll be places that look and smell and feel like Babylon. And the strange activities they get into, building up a war machine or making a building that will go up to heaven, although people today don't care about heaven, and so it probably won't be a tendency that way. I'm not too far away from Cadillac Ranch, which, as a tourist spot, absolutely flummoxes me, absolutely floors me in why this is a spectacle to be seen. Five Cadillacs buried nose first in the ground. The guy that did it, still occasionally gets touted around the artist scene. And it just indicates the extreme artist ethic of just horrible, an aquarium full of urine, or half full of urine, with a crucifix dropped in it, and this qualifies as art. And it's like, I don't. Sorry, I know it's supposed to make some statement for what the artist was trying to say, and you go, I don't give a flip what you're trying to say. I'm certainly not paying to see this. It says that I find it interesting when I go by the Cadillac Ranch, and there's always a pretty good number of people parked there to look at it. And the guy who did it, you know, there's a lot of graffiti that's been done on it over the years. Heck, my steak in Amarillo painted over the graffiti on it. I think it was hilarious. It's like, this has got to be the stupidest activity to do, you know, and because it is the kind of low, sick art that you can't really improve particularly. It's only interesting if it's got a lot of graffiti on it. So I think the whole painting over it to make it look different, to make it look better, was an exercise in silly futility. Just being an outlet. Oh, I got away from the sexualization and how everybody, all these people need some kind of outlet. And ultimately, the outlet that we're going to have is going to be something akin to war. It's going to be war and death, and that will be people's outlet. World War I, and people decry the fact that, like in England or the United Kingdom, it was kind of a pub challenge to go out and go to war. Oh, this is going to be great. We're all going to go out together, and it's going to be fun, and we're going to, you know, and this is all about manhood and bravery, and we're going to go out and do this World War I thing. We're going to fight the Hun. And they went out, and of course, it's trench warfare, and it was horrible. And the people who didn't die from it were permanently scarred a lot psychologically for these things. And a lot of the survivors, I think, became kind of the conservative class that just says, you know what, I've seen what bravery and heroism and stuff like that does. And when we try to paint, the most important thing in life is to be a hero, it really is bringing on this whole thing that we're going to, you know, heroes die. The whole thing that we could find some hero and they go out, they battle the world and they do this, and they do this amazing feat and that amazing feat. And then they come back and miraculously, at least in the story, the world is saved, the world is protected or whatever. Is kind of silly. And you know what? I am still quite the liberal. I'm not a leftist, but I see some value in some of the things that these people tend to want to have. When it comes to things like universal health care, to a certain extent, I'm not opposed to it, you know. Although the way we do it now is terrible. I tend to avoid the medical world because it's horrible. Do I contribute to it? It's kind of. I'm somewhat exempt from it because I do Christian health shares, but to be honest, most of the Christian health shares that are around don't like Latter-day Saints. They don't want them. I found one that just isn't throwing it in my face, making me hideous. I like the Samaritan Ministries way of doing it the best. I liked that the most. It seemed like you were actually helping people with medical needs and with medical bills. You would help them pay their medical bills, and they would give you back thanks to say, thank you so much for helping me with those medical bills. But they just didn't like Latter-day Saints. So it's like, okay. And it was pretty much a, you need to get lost. And it's like, that's hilarious because we're a pretty healthy bunch by nature, you know. Anyway. Okay. The sexualization has just become some kind of weird release. And it's getting less and less. It works less and less for people who are enamored, stuck radical anything, radical sensuality. Let's call it that. When they say we're over-sexualized, it's like, you know, I think it has more to do with sensuality. Overly sensualized. People want to have these experiences just for the experience, so it's more sensual than anything else. And in being that, you know, it doesn't satisfy. It doesn't satisfy the inherent need that was put into us by God and by nature, you know. When we talk about the creation of the world and about plants propagating and animals propagating and the things that we share in common with these things, you know, the need to pair off, the need to couple, the need to have more children, you know, to just keep the species going. And the fact that we're not doing it, and it comes back to very interesting, and I need to put it out more readily, and I forget the name of it. Oh my gosh. You'll have to look at the things that I write, and it'll pop up there. Except that I don't think I've made that very... I haven't finished my population written thing. It's going to be quite small, so it's not going to be too bad. But it's about the fact that certain people are still having children. But there's a lot of people that it isn't that we're having fewer children, particularly. Some people are still having as many children as they always did. It's just that more and more people are choosing not to have children at all. And it's become that weird split. The number of people that are just not having children, period, is exploding. And the same people who were having children continue still have children in the numbers that are interesting to them. You know, they were saying, I think it was a study done in Japan. And they said, when you go and you meet the people who, you know, people who come from big families, a lot of them are going on to still have a pretty big families. It has not stopped happening. In fact, okay, let me take this for instance. My grandparents on my father, my paternal grandparents had 5 children. Good for them. They'll be blessed for it. Because this is a commandment. This is what Heavenly Father wants us to do, and it brings greater joy to have a posterity. My parents only had 2 children. And I think that was because they were overly influenced by things. And to be honest, I don't know if my dad was really that interested in having any other kids with my mom. My parents had an interesting relationship that fell apart. They were married for 17 years. I'm very happy because Lisa and I have been together for 35. This is doing a good job. Now, my father and his second wife, who did not have children together, my father got a vasectomy when he was married to my mom, just so that they wouldn't have any more kids. I think mom wanted more kids, and dad just said no. And to be honest, I have to say that with relationship between my parents, I can see why. And now this is not going to go out there. It's really sad. I thought this was really going well. I don't want to say bad things about my parents, particularly. It's not interesting. Although, I may still put it out as a Cohen Meander one, but it may be a personal one now. Anyway, so let me go ahead and stop this one and go on with something else that might be more interesting. So let's go ahead and stop this. This will just stay a number and go into the regular pot, into the personal pot, and stuff like that. Maybe we'll talk about something else for Cohen Meander.